On this episode of What's in a Game, we talk about Dishonored 2, where the richest person in the game steals everyone's stuff during a time of crisis. Welcome to What's in a Game from Fountain City Frequency, a podcast where the nerdiest couple you know takes a deep dive into games both old and new. I'm Dana Masters.
And I'm Cody Newell.
What's up, Cody?
Just chilling. It's raining here in Kansas City on 4th of July, which is really great.
Before we get started, Cody, I was just wondering, what is your favorite game console?
My favorite game console?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because...
Because you're a PC man?
Well, now I've made that transition fully, which has been a really good decision, but most of my life has been spent playing console games. But it's hard because, like I played a lot of Nintendo 64, mm-hmm. but is that my favorite console? I don't know. Like, going back to it now, like, some of those games are pretty rough in
those
a lot of ways.
Those are pretty sticky.
Yeah. I guess I might have to go with, like, NES, because that was what I started out on.
Okay.
That was what really, like, got me into games, because it was, I mean, just playing like Super Mario Brothers 3 and Punch Out and Duck Hunt and all of that stuff. Like,
well, let it be known for our Wikipedia page that will happen someday. Cody's favorite console is the NES.
What about you?
I feel like I pick favorites based on just like what I play the most. And again, all those consoles were taken away from me as a kid. So I played a lot of, like, Xbox 360, but I think I actually prefer the PS3 because it's still got the nice feel of those PS2 controllers, and it's got nice graphics.
But it does have those squishy L2 and R2 buttons. That was the one thing I don't like about the PS3 controller.
Me.
Really?
I'm fine with that.
They squished a little too much. But the PS3 and Xbox 360, both really good consoles. Yeah. Actually, like, maybe one of the best console generations to have come out. Though it also lasted for like 8 years or something like that, so.
So what are we talking about this week, Cody?
We're talking about Dishonored 2. Give me the elevator pitch. What is Dishonored 2 about?
All right, Dishonored 2. Clearly the sequel to Dishonored 1.
No way.
Where you played as the Royal Protector. You played as a character named Corvo, who was trying to find out who the killer of his lover, empress, wife thingy, baby mama.
Right.
Trying to figure out who killed her, as well as trying to find Emily, the empress's daughter, that you, spoiler, find out is your daughter. Exciting. So this is a sequel to that game 15 years later. It's a game that can require stealth. It's in the same vein as like Deus Ex and Thief.
Right.
So you get that kind of feel.
Set in a kind of steampunky setting. The first game was in Dunwall. This one's in Karnaca, mm-hmm. which is another city in this empire.
So you get a new setting, which is really nice.
Right.
In this game, you get to choose whether you want to play as Emily, the little bratty girl that you rescued 15
all
years
grown
earlier.
Up.
And much more mature, thank God.
Yeah.
Or you can play as Corvo again. It starts off with you are having an anniversary for your mother's death, which was really morbid. And it's interrupted by a duke from Cirkonos.
An island to the south, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Your Imperial Majesty and Royal Protector Corvo Atano, a native of our homeland. Cirkonos offers condolences on this sorrowful day and gifts to remind you of our nation, the rising star on the southern horizon.
And he says he's brought a gift. And it turns out it is a woman named Delilah.
Delilah Caldwin.
Oh, she used to be Delilah Cobberspoon, but she is now right. claiming to be the long-lost sister of your mother, Jessamine Caldwin.
Living in my palace has protected you, but that's over. Hear me, all of you. Your rightful empress has returned.
Without giving too much away, one of the characters, either Emily or Corvo, is dispatched with for the game, and you can choose which one you want to play as. I don't know why anybody would want to play as Corvo, because you've already done that, so both of us chose to play as Emily.
I guess if you really want to use his powers, but yeah, I mean, it is a little... It seemed like to me this game was meant to be played as Emily, so we both played as Emily.
Right. And before all this is going on, like, you're having trouble in your empire because people think that someone is going around killing all of Emily's...
political rivals.
Yes. Right. And it looks like it's done in the style of Corvo.
Right. Which kind of sets up the Duke and Delilah's kind of coup, as they say, like, this is the crown killer. Take them away.
Yep. So the person going around killing all of her rivals calls themselves the Crown Killer, and people suspect it as Corvo. So there's already a lot of suspicion.
Right.
So that's why this coup can kind of go off without too much of a hitch. So the remainder of the game, whichever character you play as, you are trying to, A, get your throne back, B, either rescue your daughter or your father, and C, trying to figure out who the Crown Killer is.
Right.
And that is Dishonored 2 in a nutshell.
So I guess let's talk about the characters, since you get to choose between Emily and Corvo. One of the things that I hated in the first Dishonored, absolutely hated, was the voice acting. And this time around, it's a little bit better. Just a little bit. But it is better.
I would say Erica Luttrell as Emily is fantastic.
She's the standout,
yes,
for sure. She is the best voice actor in the game.
I think she does a great job.
In his day, Sokolov was Dunwall's genius. He transformed our city with his inventions. Electricity for the factories and carriages racing along above the streets. His stories always made me giggle, and his outrageous conversation shocked aristocrats and overseers alike.
Not as big of a fan of Stephen Russell.
As Corvo.
Yeah, Corvo did not talk in the first game, so there wasn't too much issue with that, but...
I'm pretty sure the reason they got him in this is because I think he had a role in Thief or one of the Thief games. And since this is like the spiritual successor to Thief, I think they really liked that idea of just getting him in this game. Since we both played as Emily, though, I didn't hear his voice very much or enough to really be like, oh, wow, like his voice is either his. I didn't get enough to judge his performance.
Every year, I think the anniversary of Jessamine's death will be easier, but it never is.
I wish Mother was still the Empress. I don't think I'm very good at this.
You're still learning. Don't worry about the rabble-rousers, and we'll catch the Crown Killer eventually.
They do lean on way too much Hollywood talent yet again, and I gotta say, like, man, some of the voices are bad in this game. Like, the Duke is...
talks like this the entire time,
right,
which I think is really funny, and right, I kind of enjoyed it.
I feel like it's Vincent D'Onofrio, and I think he could have done a lot better. I really think he's actually a pretty good actor, but it's just like, it's really over the top.
And see, I enjoyed that. I think he is an over-the-top character, a man of luxury, and I thought the voice fit. I liked it.
Also, I guess I can understand that more than I can understand your main ally in the game, Megan, played by Rosario Dawson, who, like, I didn't think had a whole lot of... She's just very monotone the whole time, it seemed to me.
My name's Megan Foster. I work with an old ally of yours, Anton Sokolov. We learned something scary down in the south, and I came to warn you.
For me, I was fine with that, because she's not a very emotive character until you talk with her more at the end.
I guess, but I would have liked to have a little bit more from this character that clearly has, like, a lot of backstory and has a lot of things going on, and over the course of the game, you know, they kind of reveal some of that. I wish she would have had a little bit more going on.
I still think the voice acting was much better than in the first game.
Oh, yeah. The first game was straight up terrible. This is not that level at all. Like, I didn't feel like the plot was being hampered by the voice acting. In the first game, I felt like the plot was actively torpedoed by the fact that the voice acting was so bad.
I mean, some of those guards, man.
Oh, boy.
Shall we gather for whiskeys and cigars tonight?
Did you hear Morris was dragged off by the overseers for some black magic nonsense?
Shut up.
They gave the guards better banter, and even the little characters sound a lot more interesting this time around.
They also got some female voice actors in there to play some of the guards, which I think just instead of having all the same main male bodyguards talking like this, you have some female voices in there to at least mix it up a little bit. Yeah. Like, it's not the same person just talking to themselves.
Right. So. Which was nice.
Something else that I think really stepped up from the first game to the second game is the music.
I don't really remember the music from the first game, so I guess that is a sign that it was a step up.
I think the music from the first game kind of, like, stuck to that, you know, theme. The da-na-na-na-na-na-na. I think it used that theme a lot in the first game. It's the same composer. It's Daniel Licht. But I think he had a lot more variety, especially in the levels. I really enjoyed the music in this game. It really got me into it.
It actually, I think, helps the setting a lot.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one song, and I can't remember the name of, like, the title of it, but there's this one song that plays, I think, mainly when you're on, like, Megan's ship, that, like, really made it feel like this kind of, you know, like, coastal city vibe. And I think it really added to, like, just the sense of setting.
And maybe the setting of the game helped with the composing of the music, because it was all set in Dunwall in the first game.
Right.
And in this one, you're exploring different areas of an entirely different island.
Yeah, Dunwall felt like what I imagine, like, 1800s or early 1900s London would have been like.
Mm-hmm.
And Karnaca made me think of, like, Treasure Island, like, kind of almost has that near piratey feel to it, but it doesn't go over the top. I think it really fits really well.
The design of the game is beautiful.
Yeah, like, visually, I think the music kind of helps. The music helps the visuals a lot, and the visuals are, like, outstanding in this game. It's an incredibly artistically and, like, technically beautiful game.
Right. And, like, this world incorporates a lot of, like, the arcane and magic. So a lot of the settings have, like, glowing items and, you know, kind of this, like, mystical look that still, it doesn't take you out of the setting.
Right.
But it definitely, like, creates a visually appealing game.
Yeah.
Everything is shiny. You want to touch everything, look at everything, shadowy.
Well, it's like the first game, like, tried pretty hard to do, like, to almost look like an oil painting. And, like, this game actually nails it.
Yeah.
Like, the first game didn't really come, like, it came close, but it didn't quite get it, and this one really does. And just the look of this world is different than Dunwall. Like, Dunwall was very, like, industrial, and this is too, to a certain extent, but I feel like there's also a different flavor that's kind of borne out by some of, like, the shapes and the colors and just some of the, like, architectural choices of this world.
I was about to say, they're also moving into, like, robotics and things like that, so you've just got, like, that metallic shine in a lot of these levels. It's like mixing, like, mechanical and magic, and I don't know, it's a really fun game to play through and just, like, look at things. I am the player that will look at everything. I look at a lot,
which is why, like, that's good for this game, because there is a ton to find. There's a ton of, like, little hidden things and loot and little stories you can find, like, hidden away in, like, random apartments and, you know, like, buildings that, you know, you could totally pass over, but if you take the time to look through it.
I mean, even when my health is, like, at full bar, I still pick up the fruit and eat it because it looks so pretty.
It also has a very satisfying Yeah, I don't know. I think this game, I will say, it doesn't, the game sometimes struggles on PC. Like, they didn't do a very good job of porting it over. But even so, like, it's forgivable when the game looks this good and looks this unified. Like, everything looks like it fits really well. They finally really did the world building right as well. Because the first game, you know, we've talked about this before, but, like, it relied a lot on pick up this book and read about this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a lot less of a thing here.
Yeah.
They don't put as much details about the world kind of squirreled away in these texts. It's there for you to see and interact with.
And you know what else I think helped with that?
What?
I think the fact that they allowed Emily and Corvo to talk in this game.
Right.
Because they gave you a lot of insight into the world just like by talking to themselves or thinking and allowing you to hear their thoughts. You learn a lot about the world through them.
Yeah.
And you know, some games the silent protagonist works. I really think it was an improvement to have the protagonist talk in this game.
Delilah. My aunt, if that's really true. She has a twisted way of looking at the world.
Yeah, it makes the game feel more personal to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the first one, because Corvo didn't talk, it was just sort of like you were, like, the lapdog of these, like, conspirators, you know, and you just kind of had to, like, go off of them, and their voice acting was utter garbage. So it's just like you're listening to these characters just rattle off the like dumbest lines of all time. And it made it hard to care about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But like hearing like Emily actually written pretty well and performed well, you know, talk about these things and talk about her struggles and, you know, how she's kind of dealing with basically being thrown from the top of this society to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Was interesting, and I think it worked. I think you're right. It worked a lot better having them actually have voices. So we're going to, I think, talk plot now, and we're going to talk spoilers. So if you care about that kind of thing, you might as well skip ahead. If you don't, then listen on. Even though I think the voice acting is a lot better,
mm-hmm.
and I think the world building is even better than it was in the first game, and I thought the first game's world building was pretty good, I still don't know if the plot really fully works in this game.
Mm.
The fact that this game is broken up very strictly into levels makes it harder for me, I think, to have much of a through line, because you're just very focused on kind of like one assassination target at a time. And that sometimes made it hard for me.
Well, it's also the same story of putting the right person back on the throne.
Right. Yeah, it's not very original in that aspect at all.
And I mean, they didn't send anyone, like, so whichever character you play as, you escape Dunwall Tower, where you start off, and go to start unraveling this mystery. Like, you go to Sir Konos, where Delilah has seemingly come from.
Right.
And start to figure out what happened and how you can defeat her. But Delilah doesn't send anyone after you.
Right.
She knows that you're gone. And she doesn't send anyone? Like, that could have been where this game, like, the story transitioned from, like, first game basics into, like, this sequel. How can we mix up the story a bit more? And maybe it's someone hunting you this entire time.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's propelling you forward instead of assassination target number one, assassination target number two.
I mean, at least the guards do react to you, so you have to be, like, somewhat careful around them. But, yeah, like, there doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of urgency from Delilah to, like, take you out.
Or her allies.
Right.
Like, her allies should know that you're coming.
Right.
Because you figure out eventually that about five or six of them got together, and Delilah had died at one point. If you play the downloadable content, you find you've met Delilah before. She's not new. And
which I hadn't played before we played this, so I was like, who's this Delilah? I don't have no idea.
So, like, Delilah's been dead, and these five or six people get together and resurrect her, essentially, and make her incredibly powerful. But it was these, like, five people who brought her back, so when they start dropping like flies one by one, I feel like you should know that you're next on the list. It's pretty much like a hit list, like... Why would you? I don't know.
To me, it seemed like Emily and Corvo are maybe just not very good at governing. Like, if they're really struggling this hard to figure out who, like, that crown killer is, if they're struggling that hard to, like this society is still struggling incredibly hard with inequality. I mean, it's clear that there's a lot of, like, stratification. There's like the ultra rich and the ultra poor.
Which I feel like you're hoping Corvo would have learned that the first time around.
Right.
But it makes me think they just reset the society for a new game.
Right.
Like giving us everything we loved about the first and putting it in the second. But like, I feel like we could have had a different story.
Yeah.
And maybe it was a coup, but maybe there was a different way to go about telling it rather than the levels and the line of people you have to take out again.
Well, and that's maybe like wishing too much of this game, because I feel like in a way it is so focused on the mechanics and on making a fun game and an interesting game experience that it's not really that. It's the plot and characters are very sidelined.
Yeah, but if they had put as much energy into the story and the characters and their motivation as they had, like, the design, like, this game would have been, like, over the top for me.
Yeah.
I would have been like, yes, yeah. This is great.
It would be, like, a masterpiece if they had actually nailed all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know if they ever do, because it feels very by the numbers of, like, okay, I'm going to kill this person, and now I'm going to get this bit of information, and I'm going to kill this next person, or do the non-lethal choice or whatever,
right.
Which...
Because you have a morality choice. Like, this game wants to... have you make moral choices.
Which I wish it was less. I still hate that this game makes your choices add up to this weird, like, here's your low, like, if you're non-lethal, it's a low chaos state, but if you kill over this many people, you've suddenly gone into moderate chaos. Like, that's really...
Yeah.
I just don't think that works.
Yeah.
Like, morality systems in games, I think, just absolutely need to leave. I don't think I've played a game where I really thought it worked fully, and this is no exception.
I mean, I like the idea of giving you different endings based on your choices, but the fact that it, like, changes the game as you play it, like...
That's fine. I wish it was just changed in a more, like, organic way than, like, uh-oh, I killed 5 people and now I'm veering into moderate chaos.
Suddenly,
like,
there's more rats.
Right.
People are a lot meaner now.
Right. The, like, blood flies are loose now because I killed that guy. Like, it doesn't seem to make a whole
right.
lot of sense. And I don't think it encourages... I also, this is my problem. Not so much with this game, because they're a little bit more lenient. But in the first game, it's like if you killed over a certain amount of people, suddenly you were like the devil incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that certain ways of playing this game that might be really fun and interesting were kind of like cut off, right? So like if you wanted to stay good, you couldn't kill anybody and you basically were limited to a couple of choices of non-lethal
mm-hmm.
play. This game is a little bit better. I would say Dishonored 2 is not as punitive, but it's still there. It's still like a factor that's there. And I'm not sure. I just don't think that works personally.
I've been fighting scum like you since I put on the uniform.
You're done.
You hide your face, coward.
You are. It's you and me now.
You and I had differing opinions on the choices you were given. On how to take out your targets.
Right, because and this is also a problem I have. This is why I wish they would just take the morality system out entirely, because, like, some of the non-lethal choices are not better choices or not more ethically sound, right? Like, one of the choices is when you go through the Clockwork Mansion, which I think was one of our favorite levels from the game, because it's mm-hmm. just, it's absolutely crazy. But when you get to the end, you have the choice of taking this genius, he's ushered in this new age of technological advancement, and you have the choice of either killing him or lobotomizing him to the point where he can't even hardly remember his own name.
No, no, no! You don't know what you're doing! Anything! I'll give you anything you want!
See, if it weren't for, like, the whole, like, this is the better choice, lobotomizing him,
right.
I would have found that really interesting. Like, the game is presenting you with two choices that are equally, like, unpleasant.
Right.
Like, neither one of those choices is fun. I wish, like, one wasn't labeled as the better, like, you'll get the nicer outcome.
Right.
Like, I just wish they were choices. And each had their own consequences.
Right. Instead of having to graft it onto this system that... Because, like, how is lobotomizing this genius who has crafted this entire apparatus for this society, how is lobotomizing him going to affect chaos? How is that going to keep things in low chaos?
Well,
I would think that would make things even more chaotic, because suddenly the creator of all these things is gone, and we don't know how to deal with that because we've become too accustomed to this technology.
Right. And I think it's very black and white.
Right.
Like, is there a way you could have convinced him
right.
to use his genius for good?
And this game is already not dealing in black and whites. There's a lot of, like, morally gray things going on. And I don't know, it just... Like, for a game that gives you so many choices in so many other ways, because, like, when you're going through levels, you have a lot of choices of how to get to your targets. Sometimes you can, like, circumvent entire sections of, you know, the level. Like, the Clockwork Mansion, you found out later, and I didn't know this, that if you jump up through a certain window, you basically won't set off the security measures, and you can have, like, a breeze through the level.
Burglars, fortune hunters, and professional killers come through my door. Only to expire begging for mercy, crying out for release after only a few hours.
That is a prime example of me looking things up.
Dana Spoiler Masters.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems bizarre. It seems bizarre that for a game that gives you so many different choices, it still feels the need to graft you onto this morality system that I just don't think worked. But I will say, there are a lot of interesting characters throughout the story. I think Kieran Jindosh was really interesting as a character, and the fact that he created the, like, all this vast technology was really interesting.
And you have your father's eyes, your imperial majesty. Welcome, Lady Emily Caldwin.
Impressive, Jindosh. Then you must also know why I'm here.
I'd assume my involvement with the Duke brought you to my door.
I know you think that, the voice actor for Megan was very monotone, but I found Megan to be an interesting character as well.
Well, she's an interesting character. She just isn't sold as much, I don't think, and I wish she was a little bit more.
You also have a lot of fun characters. Like, you get to see Anton Sokolov again, and it's really fun to see him pretty close to death and rethinking a lot of things. Like, that was interesting for me to see how that character transitioned a bit.
Emily Caldwin, if you're here, things have gone further than I thought. But Kieran Jindosh?
Not dead, but I used his machines on him. His mind is not what it was.
You were an interesting little girl. You've become a fascinating woman.
I also really enjoyed Brianna Ashworth. An occult follower who also has a lot of power, who is almost Delilah's, like, right-hand woman.
Oh, right, her, yeah.
And the leader of the coven of witches that follows Delilah. And there's also, or there's almost, like, this worshipy, like, lover quality about Brianna that I found really fun. And she's also a much smaller character that you don't get to interact with as much. She's one of your targets.
Right.
But I thought that was really fascinating, that it wasn't one of these male characters that was, like, fawning over her and had this desire to be with her all the time. It was this woman.
Right.
Which was really, I don't know, that was an interesting thing.
The witches are... pretty interesting in general, and just the way, one, I think the visual aesthetic that they had of them making, like, trees grow to, like, massive size and making plant life kind of take things over was really cool, and just their design was cool. But yeah, also their, like, sisterhood and the dynamics of that was really interesting. And I really liked the level, the conservatory level. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun to go through.
Man, you did not want to alert one of them that you were there because they would come after you.
Yeah, the witches are among the... this game has a lot of hard... I found this game harder than the first game for sure. Like, I struggled to fight against the clockwork soldiers. I struggled to fight against the witches because they teleport whenever they see you. I got caught by those ghost dogs like 8 times and was pissed.
I was morbidly fascinated with, like, how the witches just, I don't know, like, killed men and had them at this, like, dinner table, like, talking with them. Like, there's something so messed up about that, but really fascinating to kind of see that, like, in a weird way, it was kind of like an empowered female group that you didn't really want to like at the same time.
Right. They're most certainly evil.
I feel like women definitely had more of a place in this game than they did in the first game.
Yeah.
It was all men in the first game. And as a female gamer, it is fun to have the choice to play as a female character, to have your villain be a female character, and just to see, like, female guards, female villains. It seemed pretty balanced to me, and I liked that a lot.
Yeah, thanks. For sure.
For now, I give you the greatest gift of all, family. I present the lost sister of Jessamine Caldwin, your rightful empress, Delilah Caldwin.
Impossible.
My mother had a sister?
Oh, one of the levels that I really liked was, in fact, one of, I think both of us really liked this one, was, what was his name? Aramis Stilton?
Yeah.
The Stilton Mansion, which is, like, caught between time.
Uh-huh.
And you pick up this item that lets you basically see back in the past, and you can, like, warp between time periods, but you can, like, raise up the fan on it and see the past, like, reflected as you're standing mm-hmm. in the present, which was crazy, crazy, crazy. And that level had some crazy choices that I didn't even know about when I was playing through it, which you found out later.
Again, I spoiled myself. I really wanted to save as many people as I could. And Aramis Stilton is not someone you necessarily want to take out.
Right.
I wanted to save him, and I found it afterward. I was like, why didn't that work? Why didn't I save him?
Right. He was kind of an unwilling participant in the ritual that brought mm-hmm. Delilah back.
And it has him go insane.
Right.
He can't handle what he saw.
But you can save him.
For me, it didn't seem very obvious, but you have to, like, take a note from Aramis Stilton to figure out where the ritual's happening. And you can easily just steal it from his pocket, or you can knock him out. And apparently he then misses the ritual.
Right.
And then he's fine, and it completely changes the future. So that was interesting.
And that also changed Megan's character, because apparently she was involved with him, and if, you know,
she didn't hear from him for a while after he went insane.
Right.
So she goes to check on him, and it was a bad choice. She, like, loses her arm and loses an eye. But if you save Aramis Stilton, she has her arm and her eye back, I believe.
Right. If you keep him out of that ritual, she's completely changed, which is crazy. That's a really smart thing to do mm-hmm. that I hadn't even really thought about, and I didn't think the game was going to do that. And I guess that's another example of this game giving a lot of options and choices and things like that. And I think this is an example of choices done really well, which is that if you manage to figure it out, you can really make a difference in this game's story. In not like a drastic way, but it is a difference.
You know, and he was like a third. He had like three choices for him.
Right.
You could kill him, you could knock him out, or you could let him go.
Right.
If you kill him or let him go, like, it turns out pretty similar, I think.
Yeah.
But if you choose to knock him out,
Changes.
I kind of wish you had third choices in some of these other characters that you picked. Speaking of levels, though, I really enjoyed the Clockwork Mansion level.
Yeah, that's one of the standouts for sure. I almost wish I hadn't seen some of the, like, pre-release material, because I did see, like, we went to PAX and they had, like, a Clockwork room set up with
Which
a bunch
cool.
of stuff. It was really cool, but I almost wish I hadn't seen that. Because it would have made that level even more surprising. But it was still pretty surprising.
But even if you'd seen the trailer, that was, like, what they featured. They featured his mansion and you just, like, running through trying to get at him while the levels all change. So I feel like that was not something that could have surprised you unless you avoided all promotional material.
That was still a cool level, though, because it had a lot of puzzle solving. And, in fact, this game is really a lot more heavy on puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Than the first one. Like, the Clockwork Mansion has the cool, like, raise, there's, like, where you're trying to save Sokolov and you're stepping on certain areas and the walls are coming up mm-hmm. in this kind of, like, makeshift maze.
Running search protocol.
Sokolov.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
And the Clockwork Mansion just has a ton of pathways. Like, you can find, I walked around, like, behind the scenes. Like, I managed to get down in kind of, like, the belly of the mansion and walked around for, like, I was in that mansion for hours. I was in that level for hours, just looking at everything and looking at how it all fit together, which was really cool. Also, the thinking of puzzles, the door puzzle, the logic puzzle before you go to the Stilton Manor, that was crazy.
That was fun.
Yeah, and we both solved it.
I haven't done a puzzle like that since, I think, elementary school.
You had a crazy grid going on.
I know.
You had multiple pieces of paper.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Just sit there and try and figure it out. There, it does give you a way to go steal it from someone. And
if you want to put the effort into that puzzle, you totally can. And if you do that, you won't even see a whole lot of that area, which is, again, like, I really like that the game has choices like that and options like that.
I really liked the Duke's Mansion.
Yeah.
Level. Not necessarily for, like, any puzzles or anything, but it was really modern.
Yeah.
It was different from all the other buildings that I've ever seen in the game. It had, like, you know, those sleek, smooth walls, that geometric design. It was, I don't know. It was just different to look at. It was fun.
That level was pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Like, I made it through it pretty fast, but it was cool to look at. And it was cool to, I really liked the main puzzle of that, which was there's the Duke and then his body double. And you can try to convince the body double to basically usurp the Duke and take his place. Or you can just kill the Duke if you want to, which that, I killed the Duke.
I didn't. I wanted to use his body double, mostly because, like, I'd read letters to the body double from, like, people in Cirkonos who are like, can you please convince the Duke to do this?
Right.
Like, please. And he's like, I'll try.
Right.
I was like, hey, this guy's pretty all right. He seems to have the people's interests at heart. So I decided to put him in place. It seemed only fair.
Yeah.
Other Duke was a jerk.
I figured that Emily would not show mercy to the Duke because he was pretty gross. And
see, I thought it was a more fitting punishment to have him sit in jail and, like, everybody thinks he's insane. And he is the only one aware, other than me and the body double, that he's the real Duke.
Right.
So I thoroughly enjoyed that punishment. I will say that level had some aspects to it that could really show you some of the terrible things that the upper class does.
Right.
They were using servants, like, had them hanging and would use them for target practice with knives.
Right.
Just for fun, and we're just laughing about it, and it was disgustingly awful. It was also a section that you could just skip over.
Right.
Like, I almost didn't even go into that area. I would have had no clue that was going on. I would say the level design in this game was exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah. All the levels are designed, like, less like video games and more like actual places. Like, I feel like there was a strong, like, architectural consistency that made the levels feel like they made sense in a lot of ways, which was really cool. And I think made them a lot of fun to poke around in, because there were a lot of just hidden, a lot of, you know, rooms that you might miss the first time, and a lot of pathways that you might not find, and a lot of, like, you know, there might be a sewer pipe that you could kind of go into that would have you kind of maybe start at the bottom of a level and make your way up. Or there might be some, you know, servants' quarters that sort of are threaded through the level, and you could explore all of those. Just a lot going on in all of them, especially like the Clockwork Mansion, where things are actively changing as you're going through it, which was really, really, really cool. The level design is really strong, and I feel like really complements the powers pretty well.
Yeah.
Especially some of the powers that, so you have different powers depending on whether or not you play Emily or Corvo. Emily's power is, though, she has the best power in the game, I think, which is Domino.
Yeah.
Where you can link the, you know, multiple people together, and then what happens to one will happen to all of them, which made, like, a non-lethal playthrough or a mostly non-lethal playthrough a lot more fun.
Significantly easier.
Yeah.
But it could also backfire on you.
Right.
The guards are still stupid in this game. Oh, my God. If you're using Domino on a guard and trying to choke them out, and the other guards, like, see you, they'll come up and they'll stab the guy that you're trying to choke out, killing all of them.
They're really trigger happy. They are really trigger happy. If you're about to choke someone out and another guard sees, more often than not, they will just shoot them.
And then they blame you?
Right.
You made this man, you made someone a widow tonight. Right. Or how could you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You were the one who just shot him.
Right.
Like, you had plenty of time to see that I was holding this guy up and you just shoot. Like, right. What? Like, that was infuriating.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, having Domino on them and they accidentally kill themselves, like, that power is amazing.
Yeah.
If you play as Corvo, I think you have all of the same powers from the first game.
Yeah, and I think there might be some extended things, too, some refinements and whatnot. His teleport, apparently, is, like, instantaneous as well, which Emily's is not, and that definitely screwed me over a couple of times, which was really frustrating. But
see, and I never got caught using Reach. Is that what it was called?
Far Reach.
Reach. I liked it. I felt like Spider-Man. I was just slinging all around.
See, and I didn't know that you could use Far Reach. I found this out later, that you can use it to grab enemies. I didn't know that until, like, the very end.
That's one of the upgrades. You can grab enemies, fling them towards you, and just... It's a pretty neat assassination move if you're going that route. You can also grab items and bring them to you as well at some point.
I also didn't have this until pretty late, but the decoy or doppelganger power.
One.
It was really, it actually was very interesting because you could throw your doppelganger, you could like hide up on like a bookshelf or something and then throw your doppelganger down like in front of some enemies and it would run and then they would chase after it, which actually like... was really useful, especially in the last level where there's like quite a few enemies that are roaming the hallways. It was really useful to have something to just get them away for a while.
I didn't use this as much, but I liked Shadow Walk.
Yeah, it was cool.
I used
that a lot.
It was just kind of, it made you feel cool.
Right. But like this weird shadow demon thing crawling on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was also featured in the trailer.
Yeah.
It makes it very hard for enemies to see you, actually, while you're using that. I think a lot of people complained about Emily's powers, but I really liked some of them.
I thought they all really fit, and I felt very powerful by the time I reached, like, the last third of the game or so. I did play on hard for a lot of it, though, and that definitely made a difference with the guards. Like, they are...
They're
very attentive.
For being so dumb,
yeah.
They're pretty perceptive.
Right.
You made someone a widow tonight, damn it.
So the last level and the confrontation with Delilah, what did you think about it all?
It was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Because Delilah was an interesting... villain, because she had throughout the game is reminding you, as Emily, that your mom wasn't always that great.
Right.
She was the bastard child. She was thrown aside, and for a while you don't believe her. But I think it's become clear that she's not lying. She is a product of a poorly ruled empire.
Jessamy died quick on an assassin's blade, but my mother lingered for weeks after a fat guard broke her jaw. They threw me out when she died. I looked up at the lights of Dunwall Tower and swore revenge.
You find out in this final level that she's making this giant portrait using her magic to create a world that she can rule over. And you find out that everybody's just turned into stone,
right.
And it's just her. And for me, that was kind of a letdown. I was like, okay, yeah, she's a villain because she wants to turn everyone to stone. Like, it was very lonely. But also, I didn't think really fit what her character was after.
Right.
So
that might have been an opportunity to talk about the underclass of this game's world and how they've been abused by the kind of ruling class. But they kind of just, like, I think you're right, they just gloss over it.
Or even if she said something like, you know what, people are better off as stone. They're all cruel. Everybody has the capacity to be incredibly cruel. I'm going to make sure that they can never do that again. But that wasn't a part of that.
Right.
So you can either kill her or trap her in her own world. I don't know. I feel like the villains end up being very simple and dishonored.
Yeah.
And this, she ended up being a lot less compelling at the end than what she was in the beginning, which is unfortunate.
Well, in that level is very, very quick. I made it through that pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
and the last confrontation wasn't much of a confrontation. It was like I really stealthily got up and took her out very quickly. And so it was just like, yeah, it was a lot of build up because this is a long game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of build up. And then it was just like, oh, I did it. And now I've saved Corvo. Yay. Like, but and then my real problem is after you do that, then getting your ending, which this game does the same thing as the first one did, where basically you have the outsider like narrating what happened afterward.
He went and became a better ruler.
Right. And
blah, blah, blah.
And it doesn't say anything. It's like if you've played the Low Chaos run throughout it, Emily talks about how she wants to make this society better. But like
Emily the benevolent.
Right.
Emily the kind.
Right. But it's like it just doesn't. It doesn't really fully fit when you're just like saying like Emily did this, and it's like, well, wait, like, did she make things better? Like, why is now suddenly she like this better ruler? Like, it was very hasty.
It's the same problem with the BioShock games and
right.
with Deus Ex. They give you these like little snippets that are narrated, and they're maybe like a few minutes long, and it doesn't give you much, which is really unfortunate, because I know like a good example of this, in my opinion, and you probably disagree, is Heavy Rain. Like, it gives you different endings, but it gives you those cinematic sequences that give you a little bit more closure. And I feel like that would have been so simple to do with any of those games, but especially with this one, it would have been simple to like see Emily interacting with some subjects or see people rebuilding or see a like committee of people who are going out and exterminating the blood flies and like helping
right.
people rebuild their homes, or I don't know, what are you going to do with the witches? Like,
right. Because as it is, it just shows like, it's like, here's Emily and Corvo as still as part of the ruling class, and we kind of had to trust you that they're doing better.
And you know, the only ending that I found interesting was Megan's,
yeah.
when it shows you that she may be going back with Dowd.
Right, she might be going because she it reveals that she's a former assassin that went by the name of Billy Lurk.
Yep.
Yeah, that was interesting, and that's setting up. They had just announced some DLC that she's going to be part of. So
great.
I think that's going to be really interesting, and I'm looking forward to that.
But I feel like, you know, it was just the ending just dropped it.
Yeah.
I hate those endings.
Yeah.
Like they're.
They're not satisfying,
it's
and
not
they're
the
not a good.
I wanted.
They're just not a good, like, narratively. That's just not a good way to end. Like, I understand why they do that. I think they do that because they want people to feel like, oh, I know what happened, like, long afterward, and I can feel like there's a good, like, sense of closure.
But I feel like a scene,
right?
An action,
right, is a lot better of a way to do that.
This is like a portrait of Emily and Corvo looking out into the distance.
You know, they should be showing. And not telling.
Exactly.
And this is where, once again, they run into that, and it's a problem.
Well, if we ever do the BioShock games or Deus Ex, you're going to hear the same thing from us, because
right.
this is my least favorite way to end a game.
Haku, for sure. Haku, what is it to you? A feast or a
famine on the nail screw? How odd, dressing like that.
So, Cody, what are your final thoughts on Dishonored 2?
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is, I guess we talked about it a little bit, but this is a game set in a society where there is a pretty large gap between the rich and the royalty and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
That works really well as a setting. That's really compelling as a setting, but I'm not sure that the game really has a whole lot to say about inequality,
mm-hmm.
because I think it gets close. Like, there's a moment, like, throughout the game, Emily talks about, you know, how this is really difficult on her, and it's really, you know, she's really upset by being in, you know, seeing kind of the worst examples of this society, and or at least if you're playing the Low Chaos run, she says, like, I'm going to change these things. But there's a moment where her and Megan are talking, and Megan, you know, Emily is basically saying, like, you know, this has been really hard on me, blah, blah, blah. And Megan says, like, boo-hoo, you're royalty. Like, you don't know anything about this. Like, you don't know anything about what it's like to live here.
It's remarkable that people tolerate the Duke.
He's got an army, control of the mines, and he's had your support from the capital. At the Duke's parties, people carve up the country while eating boiled crab.
There were parties like that in Dunwall, full of toadies sucking up to me, stabbing each other in the back. Poor Empress. I could see those party lights from the roof of the abandoned butcher shop where I slept, in the flooded district. I know you grew up hard, Megan. I used to wander Dunwall with my face hidden. But when I got tired of it, I could always go back to the tower. Karnaka's given me perspective.
And notably, this is the, like, one character of color in the game telling this to the royal heir, or the empress. I mean, she is the empress.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, that just didn't really satisfy me. And that seemed really like a bad way to address inequality in a game that was released in 2016.
Yeah, I think they, like so many other games that have tried doing this, I think they dropped the ball. I don't think they said enough. But I also, like, will cut Emily a little bit of slack. Like, I saw it as, I've seen enough to know that things need to change. Like, I'm going to make a change,
I guess, but it's just, she also comes across this way whenever Delilah is talking about her background.
Yeah, I think they could have done a better job.
I think they could have, because I think they just make Emily seem kind of tone deaf and, like, very unaware of the fact that she is highly, highly, I mean, she is the top of privilege in this society.
I think she does have some moments through dialogue where she does prove that she's learning, though.
But I, like, she doesn't give a specific, you know, she doesn't say, like, oh, this, she doesn't, there doesn't seem to be a real understanding of, like, systems of power and mm-hmm. how certain things can be stacked against certain classes, and there's absolutely no mention of race in this game whatsoever, mm-hmm. which they don't need to necessarily, but it just seems bizarre to me. It just didn't seem to really nail it. And again, like the as like a set dressing, it like works because it's very compelling imagery,
mm-hmm.
but like then to have nothing to really say about it seems disappointing to me. Even though I have that problem with it, I really do. I really enjoyed playing through this game. It's a really, really complex game mm-hmm. and has a lot going on. It's just fun to play around with this game and see what you can get away with and using powers in different ways and exploring all these little stories that are told through, you know, these sort of the environmental storytelling is really good of where mm-hmm. you know, walk into a room and you see, you know, someone's belongings, or maybe read a note and you kind of get like this snippet of a story. That's really compelling.
Yeah.
And just the moment-to-moment gameplay is really great. And like we said, it's a beautiful game, but I do wish it had a better plot and said more.
Yeah.
I wish it just had a little bit more. What did you think about it?
I'd say I feel the same way about the plot. I wish one of the biggest reasons I play video games is for the story. And I wish we'd spent more time on that, fleshed it out a bit more. I also don't know if I enjoyed the choice of choosing between Corvo or Emily. I think having a Corvo playthrough as like a bonus option, mm-hmm. like once you've beat the game, would have been interesting. But I think this was Emily's story.
Yeah, for sure.
And it seems kind of like it would seem weird to play as Corvo through this game and then try and, like, some of the endings we went over, like Emily is a compassionate and fair ruler after what? After being incapacitated for most of the game?
Right.
Like, does Corvo, like, relay all of this to her?
Right.
I don't know. I thought this was Emily's story, and I wish they'd been more confident about that instead of giving you either option the first time through. But I did enjoy this game a lot, and this is a game that I will replay in the future. Like I said, in our first episode, I don't think I'd play Firewatch again all the way through, but this is a game I would play again.
Yeah.
And want to keep exploring, so.
I mean, this is a game built for a replay, you know,
yep.
It's got New Game Plus in it. It's meant to go through multiple times, and there's a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that I missed a ton of things, but
I'll probably play as Corvo next time I play, but it was a fun game. I enjoyed playing it. It wasn't like a chore.
No. Definitely a really good sequel. Mm-hmm. Definitely a really good sequel.
You think they're going to make any more?
It's hard to say because these games have struggled to sell. And I think that's going to, like, I'm not sure whether or not they made back their money on it, because I assume this probably cost a lot to make. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I hope Arkane can keep doing these kinds of things. I mean, I think they're owned by Bethesda now, so hopefully all that Fallout and Elder Scrolls money can be put to keeping these games alive, because I think they actually, they're really compelling, and I really, really enjoy them, and I like games that have this level of choice and complexity. Thank you so much for listening to What's in a Game. If you liked this podcast at any point, go ahead and rate us on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. It's really, really important for podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter at What's in a Game Pod, and you can follow me at Cody Newell. What's in a Game is distributed by Fountain City Frequency and recorded at Kansas City's NPR member station KCUR 89.3. Go check out some of the other Fountain City Frequency podcasts on the network, like Iconoclast of Things, No Wrong Answers, and Archiver. That's going to do it for this episode. Next time, we're going to play Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving. We'll see you then.
Bye.